The invitations seemed routine enough, dinner at the White House. But when I arrived at the residence's green room expecting a group gathering, I found myself alone with Donald Trump. What unfolded wasn't a casual meal between president and FBI director. It was an audition for something far more troubling. "I need loyalty. I expect loyalty," he said, his eyes fixed on mine. In that moment, the careful distance between presidential power and independent justice, a boundary respected by every modern president, began to crumble. This wasn't about policy or national security. It was about personal allegiance, about bending an institution designed to serve truth towards serving a man. My silence spoke volumes, because in the Department of Justice, your loyalty isn't to any person, no matter how powerful. It's to something far more enduring, justice itself. As a young Manhattan prosecutor, one principle became my North Star. Your client is justice itself. When our paid informant, The Fly, stole crack cocaine from heat-sealed evidence bags in my office, I faced a prosecutor's nightmare. Another attorney had recently been arrested for the same crime, publicly handcuffed by Rudy Giuliani before receiving 3 years in prison. Now Giuliani wanted my sworn statement that I hadn't stolen drugs from my own case. Though we salvaged the prosecution, another crisis emerged when our lead agent confessed he'd borrowed evidence money for an unrelated case. My instinct screamed to stay quiet. Why jeopardize a solid conviction? But my supervisor insisted we tell the judge, who ordered full disclosure. The jury convicted anyway, teaching me that winning isn't everything. In the Department of Justice, how you win matters as much as whether you win. The obligation to truth is absolute, even when inconvenient. Everyone bends truth occasionally, complimenting a questionable haircut, politicians softening positions. These social lubricants keep daily life running smoothly. But Trump elevated lying to something unprecedented, attacking the very concept that truth exists. Previous presidents made false statements while acknowledging truth as the standard. Trump declared, "Truth is whatever he says. What you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening," he told supporters, inviting them to reject observable reality for his narrative. Our founders created competing systems, checks and balances, independent courts, protected press, because they knew truth emerges from rigorous testing of claims, not declarations from authority. The justice system particularly depends on our shared belief that truth can be determined with sufficient confidence to deprive people of liberty. This played out during a trial involving West African heroin traffickers. The defendant's wife testified convincingly that the voice on wiretap recordings couldn't be her husband because the speakers used the Ashanti dialect from Ghana while they were Ga people. Then she mentioned their 6-year-old son's nickname, Ya. The DEA interpreter whispered that Ya is specifically an Ashanti name for boys born on Thursday. Ga people don't follow this naming tradition. When I asked what day her son was born, her eyes widened. January 21, 1982 was indeed Thursday. Truth, pursued relentlessly, eventually surfaces. Electronic surveillance represents law enforcement's most powerful and potentially dangerous tool. Getting wiretap permission is deliberately difficult. You must establish probable cause, demonstrate targets are committing serious federal crimes using specific phones, and prove less intrusive methods failed. This careful balance reflects Alexander Hamilton's recognition that human passions don't naturally conform to reason without constraint. As FBI director, I kept J. Edgar Hoover's October 1963 memo requesting authorization to surveil Martin Luther King Jr. under glass on my desk. The 5-sentence document bearing Robert Kennedy's signature, granting unlimited surveillance authority, reminded me why oversight matters. These constraints aren't obstacles. They're what separate justice from revenge. This unwavering commitment would later guide controversial decisions about Ferguson, Hillary Clinton's emails, and investigating a sitting president. The mandate remained constant: follow facts wherever they lead, regardless of political winds or public sentiment. 6 years as a federal prosecutor taught me that adherence to Justice Department values creates a vital reservoir of public trust. This reservoir allows law enforcement to be believed in difficult circumstances because people see DOJ representatives pursuing justice, not partisan agendas. It takes tremendous time to fill, but one hole can drain it quickly. Richmond in the 1990s demonstrated this principle. Federal prosecutors reduced gun violence by aggressively prosecuting felons with firearms. Success came through transparency and community engagement, particularly in predominantly Black neighborhoods. They explained their strategy through churches, town halls, and media, enlisting community support towards shared goals. As FBI director, this guided our Ferguson response. When Michael Brown was killed by Officer Darren Wilson in 2014, the community erupted. Despite widespread claims that Brown surrendered with hands up, our investigation found these accounts false. FBI agents knocked on hundreds of Ferguson doors, and people trusted them despite distrusting local police. By issuing detailed reports explaining our findings, we maintained transparency even while delivering unwelcome conclusions. This trust, painstakingly built through consistent integrity, would face its greatest test during the Trump administration, when political pressure to weaponize justice reached unprecedented levels. The FBI wanted no part of the 2016 election between history's two least trusted candidates. A criminal referral regarding Hillary Clinton's private email server thrust us unwillingly into this maelstrom. Clinton supporters dismissed it as a routine security review, while Trump supporters chanted "lock her up" at rallies. We attempted uncovering truth where political operatives cared only about winning. By early 2016, after thousands of investigative hours, we lacked a prosecutable case. The critical element was intent. Did Clinton knowingly break protocols or merely handle information carelessly? Without clear criminal intent, there was no viable case. Attorney General Lynch's private tarmac meeting with Bill Clinton forced her to announce she'd accept whatever the FBI recommended. I made an extraordinary decision: publicly announce our recommendation against prosecution, explaining our reasoning in detail. 3 weeks later, we began investigating whether Trump campaign associates coordinated with Russian election interference, an investigation we kept completely confidential. Days before the election, investigators discovered thousands of previously unknown Clinton emails on Anthony Weiner's laptop. I faced an impossible choice: inform Congress we'd reopened the investigation, or conceal potentially significant information. After agonizing deliberation, I chose transparency. This ignited a political firestorm until we completed our review 3 days before the election, finding nothing changing our conclusions. Critics attacked these decisions, but the alternative, concealing information to influence the election, would have drained the reservoir of trust entirely. Trump found his attorney general in William Barr, who had never prosecuted a case and auditioned by criticizing Mueller's obstruction investigation. Barr quickly demonstrated loyalty through phrases like "no collusion" and "FBI spying," misleading the public about Mueller's report and intervening in cases involving Trump allies. When Michael Flynn pleaded guilty to lying about Russian contacts, Barr's Justice Department moved to dismiss his case in May 2020, claiming his lies weren't material, a move so irregular that career prosecutors withdrew. When Trump publicly demanded reduced sentencing for Roger Stone, convicted of lying during the Russia investigation, Barr intervened. After installing his staffer as acting U.S. attorney, he slashed Stone's recommended sentence, prompting prosecutors to withdraw in protest. Though Stone received 3 years, Trump commuted his sentence before he served a day. The traditional blindfold on Lady Justice was replaced with a MAGA hat. Career prosecutors and FBI agents watched decades of independence crumble. Loyalty to the president now mattered more than loyalty to justice. Restoring Justice Department trust follows Edward Levi's post-Watergate blueprint. He implemented strict guidelines limiting White House DOJ contact, established clear rules for political investigations, and created oversight mechanisms still used today. Most crucially, he changed culture by personally embodying integrity. Within 2 years, he restored both public trust and internal pride. The department's resilience during the Trump era proves its core values remain strong. career prosecutors and FBI agents continued pursuing justice independently despite unprecedented political pressure. The next attorney general must establish clear boundaries between political appointees and career prosecutors, implement transparent processes for sensitive investigations, and communicate regularly about the department's work. Trust rebuilds through consistent demonstration of values, not declarations. Every decision must reflect unwavering commitment to truth and equal justice. By systematically showing Americans their work through detailed filings and clear explanations, justice can gradually refill its reservoir of public confidence. Justice requires vigilance, courage, and people willing to say no when presidents demand loyalty over truth, the foundation upon which democracy itself stands or falls.